And welcome in to the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Michelle Knezovic. Nick Fraser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Joe Rex Road out again today. We got a whole lot to get to on the program here today. We'll have Barry Trotz, Predators incoming general manager, joining the show at 7:45. Paul Koharski from paulkoharski.com at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. And Luke Evangelista of the Nashville Predators / Milwaukee Admirals joining us at 8:30. Admirals in the midst of a playoff run. Luke Evangelista has been a big part of that, so he'll join the show at 8:30. So looking forward to that. So moving some stuff around today. The Choice is Yours coming up at 6:30 with Michelle Knezovic in the question chair a little bit later this hour. So looking forward to that. Michelle, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Robbie. Another day of 5 hours of sports talk radio. We love it.
Put Michelle to the test this week.
I've got an extra large coffee, and I'm ready to go.
Ready to get after it. Nick Fraser, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Robbie and Michelle. Back again for day two. The suit texts me and goes, hey, you think you could fill in again? I was like, I mean, if you want me to, I can. And I'm here.
Here we are. Day two with Nick Fraser behind the saddle out there. Like I said, a lot to get to on the program today. We're going to start on the Tennessee Titans. Including, I thought, a really interesting thread that I saw on Twitter yesterday from our friend of the show, Mike Herndon, who writes for paulkoharski.com, and we'll get PK's thoughts on this a little bit later in the show. But basically, the genesis of the thread really went back to the offensive line, right, and what that looks like right now. We talk about it all the time. You know, the Titans have certainly made their offensive line different, but how much better is it actually going to be? And, you know, Herndon made the point where you've got a rookie coming in that you just drafted, albeit you feel good about the rookie, but you lost your two best offensive linemen with Lawan going out and with Ben Jones going out this past offseason. Mm-hmm. Aaron Brewer is stepping into a spot that's been held down by Ben Jones for the past 6 years. You got a rookie right tackle from last year that's trying to move into his second year and take another step. We'll see whether or not he can. You got a guy, Daniel Brunskill, who did not start last year for the 49ers coming in at right guard, we would assume. And you've got Andre Dillard at left tackle, who was not good enough to be the starter at the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, granted, Philadelphia has a great offensive line, but the fact remains that Dillard still was not good enough to be a starter in Philadelphia. So Herndon's point was, are we really so sure that the Titans have drastically improved their offensive line? There's a good chance that it could be better. But what if it's not? What if you look around and you say pretty quickly, yeah, I don't know that Andre Dillard's going to get it done at left tackle. Or, yeah, Daniel Brunskill at right guard, maybe not the long-term solution. Or, as we talked about yesterday, Michelle, you know, kind of the nightmare scenario, I think, for the Titans would be that, yeah, Dillard's not really getting it done at left tackle, and Petit Frere is not what we thought he was going to be at right tackle. And then all of a sudden, you get through next year, and the offensive line's not that much better. And with all the needs you're still going to have on this roster heading into the draft in 2024, you're looking around saying, man, we might need another right tackle and we might need another left tackle at that point. So as you look at this offensive line, are we wrong to assume that the Titans' offensive line will be better next season given the moves that they've made?
I mean, it definitely is concerning, and I think that has been my hesitation this entire offseason, saying that, you know, the O-line has gotten better, and I've tried to stop myself because I really want to say, yes, it's gotten better. On paper, it's gotten better. But, you know, when you look at how depleted it was last year and, you know, you get a guy like Dennis Daly, that was a complete fail. You use draft capital to get him. You know, you put Aaron Brewer in and Dylan Radins and Nicholas Petit Frere, and essentially, you know, you're just trying to get something to work. And Mike Vrabel, I mean, the whole year said you got to protect your quarterback. And we saw how different this roster was, you know, when Ryan Tannehill went down and couldn't play for this team. And yes, you go out and you make moves and you address the offensive line. So I think, you know, from the fan base's standpoint, okay, well, you have made moves to make upgrades, but based off of the guys that you have added to this roster, you didn't go out and get an Orlando Brown Jr. You didn't go out and get a splash, big offensive lineman who's very proven in this league. You got guys who were serviceable. Maybe together they're great, but it's still a maybe. So I think it's premature to assume that it is better. It looks better, But, you know, you also still have a rookie in Peter Skoronski, and we're assuming that, you know, he's going to be able to start day one. He's a first-round pick, so he needs to start day one.
Sure.
But, you know, where does he fit in with a guy like Nicholas Petitfrère? How much of a step did he take in year one from year two? You've got an Andre Dillard coming from the Eagles to here, just from a completely different organization. Same with Daniel Brunskill. You know, what do they look like? And can Andre Dillard be a left tackle? I think that's also a major concern as well. So, you know, when we say it's better, I think it's easy to look at last year's offensive line and say, oh, that was really bad. That was really bad. It can't get any worse. So I think you can look at it and say, okay, they got better players, but how will they all work together? Because this, you know, it's not just one person. The offensive line, it depends so much on how all of them work together. So if it's not, though, it's going to be a long, long season because we could be in the another position a year from now saying, they used your first-round draft pick on an offensive lineman, and I do not think that Titans fans will be happy about that.
No, they won't. And, you know, obviously, when you look back at from Isaiah Wilson to Dylan Radins to Nicholas Petitfrère, now you've drafted Peter Skoronski. I mean, there's a lot of draft capital that you've spent on offensive line the past few years, and it's worked to varying degrees. Like, Petitfrère, I mean, he wasn't horrible last year. You know, he had some moments where he looked good, but, he certainly has to be better. Like, there's the level of play that he had at right tackle last year is not going to be the level which you need him to be at this year. Like, he's got to get better and improve, and he's a young player. I think he can improve. So we'll see whether or not that takes place this year as training camp unfolds. But there's enough questions about this offense anyway, and that's if the line is better, right? Let's say the line does improve. There's still a ton of questions. You know, what's Ryan Tannehill going to look like? Is Derrick Henry, as he approaches 30 years old, still going to be the same player? Who in the world is going to catch the ball for the Titans at wide receiver? Like, there's plenty of questions without even factoring in the offensive line. If they get to the season and it becomes apparent pretty quickly that the offensive line is not that much better, then I just don't see a path to success for this team. We've talked about the margin for error already with the offense and the receiving room being what it is. And that's with what I will assume to be improved offensive line play. If they don't get improved offensive line play or not significantly improved offensive line play, then this offense, I don't know how they're going to generate enough points. Like, well, you've got to have it.
And you're doing such a disservice to guys who've been so important to this organization the last couple of years, and Ryan Tannehill and also Derrick Henry. I mean, you know, a legendary running back who is, I think he's just about 1,600 yards away from breaking that 10,000 rushing yards in his career. And, you know, to be behind another offensive line who can't block for him, or Ryan Tannehill, a veteran quarterback who another year has to watch you draft a quarterback. Yeah. And yes, you draft an offensive lineman, but the line was so bad last year and he couldn't do anything. I mean, there was very little that he could do. And then, of course, the injury happens. But I look at this situation and I think if this offensive line isn't good, we saw how much Vrabel put an emphasis on it in his end of season press conference and said, you know, we have to protect our quarterback. And he's hit on that so many times in the game. And Rand Carthon has hit on, you know, the game starts at the line of scrimmage. It's important to, you know, be elite in the trenches. And I have a feeling if, you know, first off, you fire Keith Carter, you promote your offensive line coach in there, you move around the line, but the reality is you've made so many changes to it, it's not going to be great day one. It really isn't. And I think, you know, a couple games in, you'll be able to tell, okay, is this team look like Ryan Tannehill has at least a bit of time to get through some of his reads to make a play, considering he doesn't have many weapons out there? Because if it's not, we already talk about the wide receiver core being very, very depleted. We talk about the tight end room being depleted. You have Derrick Henry. I understand that. But we talked about 17 points a game last year, averaging. Yeah, it could be around that.
Yeah.
Maybe less.
Which is not good.
Need
to be better than that. So that's how we're starting today. Are we wrong to assume that the Titans offensive line will be significantly better next season. Hit up our text line, our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll continue that conversation coming up here in just a few minutes. I do want to get to some breaking news out of the NFL and regarding the Tennessee Titans. We knew that the Titans would be playing in London coming up this season, and now we know when and against who. They will be playing on October 15th against the Baltimore Ravens in London.
Ooh.
So Titans playing in London. The entire schedule is coming out tomorrow night, which that's another thing. Which we'll get this a little bit later in the show, but the schedule release in the NFL and the just obsession that people has over it is just hilarious.
Junie Riddle. Two words, Junie Riddle.
It's a schedule, folks.
I don't get it either,
like,
Robbie.
We already know the opponents. This it was just a schedule. That's all we're waiting on. Anyway, Titans will be playing the Baltimore Ravens at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London coming up on Sunday, October the 15th. So the Titans played in London a few years ago against the Chargers with Marcus Mariota as the quarterback, and now they're heading back overseas, taking on the Baltimore Ravens at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London coming up on Sunday, October 15th. So we'll take your reaction to that, take your reaction to our offensive line question of the day as well, 615-737-1025. We'll have more on that coming up next. Let me tell you about the Nashville Predators. Season tickets for the Preds 2023-24 season are on sale now. The Preds will be celebrating their 25th anniversary throughout next season, and full half and quarter season plans are available. You can join the Loyal Legion today and receive the best seat locations at the best pricing, up to 50% off discounts on concessions throughout the season as well, and up to 6 bonus tickets to select games in the 2023-24 season, plus priority access to the 2023 NHL Draft and awards, both of which are hosted right here in Nashville coming up this summer. You can learn more at NashvillePredators.com/season tickets. Once again, that's NashvillePredators.com/season tickets. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Matches with us. What position do you think the Titans will put Peter Skoronski at this week in rookie minicamp? And what position should Peter Skoronski play?
Skoronski, I think they'll put him at guard, most likely left guard. And let him start there. What should he play? Well, in an ideal world, he'd be playing guard.
No!
Yeah. Here's the problem you're into, though. You've got two ways to approach this if you're the Tennessee coaches. One way is to do what you're talking about. And in support of what you've been saying, Jared, that he should be playing left tackle because you put your best player at the most critical position and then build everybody else around it and let the chips fall where they may. That is a reasonable course of action.
That was Trevor Maddich on Stillman & Company for his weekly visit. Jared very upset at the idea of Peter Skoronski potentially playing at guard rather than tackle.
Oh, he wants to play. Okay.
Yes.
Did you hear Trevor? He's like, that is a reasonable expectation, Jared.
Well, I think he's going to play at guard too, at least to start. I mean, you know, I guess here's the question. If he's not playing at left guard, who is? Right?
Yes. Aaron Brewer?
Yeah. I mean he's got to play center. Like, I mean, I guess you could do Corey Levin at center and Aaron Brewer at left guard and Peter Skoronski at left tackle.
Or at quarterback, one or the other.
Or you could move, I guess you could move Andre Dillard in at left guard too. But my guess is you're probably going to see at least a start. Andre Dillard at left tackle, Peter Skoronski at left guard, Aaron Brewer at center, Daniel Brunskill at right guard, and then Nicholas Petitfrere at right tackle. Now, it's a little bit different coming up this week because Skoronski, it's rookie minicamp. So it's not like, you know, Dillard and Brewer and Petitfrere and all the other guys are going to be out there. So, you know, Skoronski very well could play a lot of different positions this week at rookie minicamp. But my guess is when they take the field the first day at training camp coming up later this summer, that it'll be Dillard at left tackle, Skoronski at left guard, Brewer at center, and then Brunskill and Petitfrere after that, which I'm fine with. That I feel like that has the makings of a solid offensive line, but I get the idea of, well, they drafted this guy at number 11 overall. You'd like for him to be a tackle at that point, but we talked about this in the pre-draft process. If he's really, really good at guard, then I can live with you taking a guard at number 11 if he's really good at that position.
Yeah, I agree with you, Robbie. I mean, if he can be, you know, serviceable at guard, maybe, you know, depending on how he is, could he be a center one day for this team for the next 10 years, be a pivotal part of this offense? And I'm just happy that we're heading into, you know, this training camp with a general idea of what the offensive line looks like, and the question of will Dylan Raidens be the right tackle will not be coming up every single day.
Don't think that's going to happen. Don't think that's going to be a question heading into training camp.
Well, and rookie minicamp coming up, we forgot to mention in the last segment, they also did draft the guy in the sixth round, Jalen Duncan, yep, from Maryland, for more depth on the offensive line. You know, I get it. He was a sixth-round pick, you know, played at Maryland. I don't know really what he has to offer. Of course, you know, most people are going to be looking at Peter Skoronski to start day one. But, I mean, what can he add, whether it be a swing tackle or just a depth piece on this offensive line, considering it was a huge problem last year of, you know, who's playing, who's hurt, who's healthy. You know, Ben Jones in there, then Aaron Brewer had to go in there. So, you know, what does he look like as well? Because I'm looking at this offensive line and I'm thinking, okay, you know, you feel more confident about the lineup we just laid out, but also, you know, who are also those pieces that can plug and play if somebody is injured, which we know this team has been a culprit of.
Trevor on the text line says, not only do you have a bunch of unproven backups coming in, but they also hired a first-year offensive line coach. This is from Trevor on the text line. That is a good thing to talk about. You brought it up earlier, Michelle. I mean, Keith Carter's out. So you got the new offensive line coach in there. You got Brunskill, who was a backup last year. You got Dillard, who was a backup last year. You got Petit Frere, who needs to take another step at right tackle. You got Aaron Brewer, that depending on who you ask, maybe he's too small to play on the offensive line.
He's 290.
He's in the neighborhood of 290, according to him. According to others, maybe he's not. But just saying.
Somebody's just on the back of that scale pushing it down.
Sitting there holding it down, doing some push-ups on the back part of that scale. But the point is, like, yeah, I don't know what this line is going to be. It's easy to sit here and say, for me, well, it's going to be hard to be worse than Dennis Daly. Like, I think we can all agree with that. Like, it's going to be pretty difficult for Andre Dillard to step in at left tackle and be worse than what Dennis Daly was, or even be as bad as what Dennis Daly was. But again, that really shouldn't be the bar. Like, the bar should not be, oh, well, at least he's better than Dennis Daly, because that's not that hard of a bar to clear at that point. Question is, like, can he be a good left tackle? I'm not saying he needs to be an all-pro over there, but can you effectively leave him out there in one-on-one matchups where you don't have to give him help and he can protect your quarterback long enough for him to get rid of the ball? Like, look, every left tackle at some point is going to get beat and they're going to give up some sacks. I get that. Now, Dennis Daly turned it into an art form last year of giving up sacks and letting the quarterback get hit. So you can't have that. But can you at least get good, solid, reliable play out of Andre Dillard? And that's the other thing. Like, we talk about the tight end position, right? They, you know, they draft Wiley out of Cincinnati. They've got Chig coming in there. Well, you also need, like, you need Chig to be able to go out and run routes and get out there and get open. Like, with the way the wide receiver room is set up right now, like, you need as many playmakers running routes as you can have. And if the offensive line is sorry heading into this year and you have to have Chig stay in there and chip all the time, that hurts your passing game that way too. Like, you need this line to be able to, for the most part, there are going to be matchups where you have to chip. But for the most part, you need them to be able to just sit in there and hold their own and give the quarterback time to pass.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, too. You know, we always laugh about, oh, blocking tight ends, you know, blocking wide receivers. They love them in Tennessee. But the reality is there are so few guys who are playmakers on this team. I mean, Chig and Treylon Burks are really the only ones I think we can say confidently. And that's not even too confident, considering, you know, Treylon Burks was hurt last year. They both were rookies last year. Chig Okonkwo didn't, you know, play as much as people were wanting to see him out there, because you feel like every time he touched the ball, he made a play with it. But, you know, that's true, because, you know, you look at this offensive line needed help from so many other people last year, you know, in addition to then just Dennis Daly being a turntable out there and Ryan Tannehill getting killed every play. I mean, you don't want to see your quarterback on the ground, you know, every single play. And this team has had the luxury of having Taylor Lewan at left tackle for – what year did he get drafted? He got drafted
2014.
2014. So, I mean, almost 10 years, right? They've had the luxury of having a guy who can be a true left tackle in this league and really, you know, be elite at that level. And then, you know, once you lose a guy like that, you hope that, you know, you can draft somebody in the time being when he's still there and eventually begin that transition. But it has just been tough with him, you know, and his injuries the last 2 years. Now, obviously, he's not on the team anymore, but trying to figure out that position. I mean, it's so crucial. It really is. We talk about the wide receiver group too, but, you know, wide receivers and playmakers don't matter much if your quarterback can't stay up on his 2 feet.
Well, then the other part of this is run blocking, right? I mean, they've got to be able to run block effectively for Derrick Henry back. We know Derrick Henry is going to get a lot of carries. You know, you've got Dillard coming in. I like Dillard's size a lot. Brunskill, you know, I've watched some of him. Like, I think he'll be okay run blocking. You know, Petit Frere's got to take a step in that area. You still got Aaron Brewer at center. He's got to take a step in that area. And then we'll see about Skoronski. You know, it's one thing to be a good run blocker in college, but can you do it in the NFL? I feel pretty good, you know, having watched some of him play, that he'll probably translate pretty well in that skill set in the NFL. But we know how important that's going to be for the Titans to do that. So lots of eyeballs going to be on the offensive line with an offense that already has a ton of question marks. They need the offensive line to be improved significantly, and we'll see whether or not it is. We brought up the London game for the Titans. They're taking on Baltimore coming up in London at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on October 15th. The rest of the schedule will be announced tomorrow. David in Arkansas on the text line says, I hate that we drew the Ravens in London. That could have been a good home game to go to. Why couldn't it be the Seahawks or a team that no one cares about? This is from David in Arkansas on the text line. Like, from the London perspective, Titans Ravens is not a bad game.
Well, they want people probably to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, give them a good game overseas. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, that would have been a really fun home game just based off of their, you know, matchup these last couple, well, a couple years ago, you know, in the playoffs, a couple years in a row. But I'm excited.
Yeah, they've announced the whole international schedule. So week 4, the Falcons and the Jags will be playing in London. And then the Jags and the Bills in week 5. In Tottenham. So the Jags just camping out over in London for a while.
Wow, 2 weeks in a row?
2 weeks in a row. And then the Ravens and Titans in Tottenham week 6. Dolphins and Chiefs in Frankfurt, Germany in week 9. And then the Colts and the Patriots in Germany as well in week 10. So a few London games and a couple of Germany games thrown in there as well for the international schedule in 2024.
I'm excited. I mean, I know we make a lot of, or some people make a lot of the schedule release, but not gonna lie, seeing some of these matchups
fired you up.
I'm getting a little excited. Like, on my page right now, it's Chiefs Dolphins.
Yes.
I'm getting a little excited about that, Robbie. Yes. I'm getting a little excited about that.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for The Choice Is Yours here on the program, a special time of 6:30 today. Michelle Knezovic is in the questions chair. We will do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
This, we all have choices to make. This. Like right now. It's The Choice Is Yours, built by Jared Companies. You have a choice, so when you have a need for site and utility work, fire protection, concrete and asphalt services, the choice is simple. It's Jared Companies. For more, visit jaredcompaniesinc.com. The choice is yours, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
It is that time of the week. Time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rex Road. Brought to you by Jared Companies, your one-stop shop for site and utility work, fire protection, paving, and concrete needs. You can get your free estimate at jaredcompaniesinc.com. Choice Is Yours at a little bit of a different time today. We've got Barry Trotz coming up at 7:45. Luke Evangelista joining the show at 8:30, which is normally when we do The Choice Is Yours. So move some things around today. Michelle Knezovic is in the questions chair. Michelle, I turn things over to you.
Now that I'm thinking about it, we should have just done The Choice Is Yours with Barry.
Well,
we got long answers.
Yeah.
Okay, so Nick, since you are the guest on Choice Is Yours this week, what do you want to start with, sports or non-sports?
Let's go non-sports.
Okay, non-sports. I just came up with these questions on the fly. So
okay.
In honor of, I mean, I know it's May, but college football is right around the corner,
ladies and
gentlemen. One college campus that you haven't visited that you would love to go for a college game day, tailgate, and experience their whole Saturday tradition.
That's a good one.
Mm.
I'll start.
Yeah, you go first.
Go ahead, Rob.
I think LSU is my answer. And I don't know that there's anything necessarily special about the LSU campus, but I've heard the tailgating is out of this world. And, you know, whether they're cooking up gator or what other Cajun food they got down there, I think LSU would be my answer. I've heard really good things. So I will go, and not just because we've talked about Ed Orgeron on the show so far this week. Let's go, let's go LSU is my answer.
I have Tiger Stadium is at the top of my list. And honestly, this just shows how northern I am. First time I went to a Kentucky-Florida football game, I saw people with gator, and I was like, where am I?
What is this?
Where am
What's
I
What's happening
right
here?
Mine is also going to be an SEC school because we all know it just means more. But it's been on my bucket list, and I kicked myself for not going last year when Kentucky played there, but it's the Grove. Ole Miss, the Grove. I mean, you just you hear so much about it, what it's like when you kind of just walk down in their entire area.
Lane Kiffin wandering around.
Lane Kiffin wandering around, of course. His dog, who has a Twitter account now, which is wild. But I think Ole Miss is at the top of my list of wanting to go down there and experience that.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I like the pick. I'm not a big Ole Miss fan. I'm a Mississippi State fan, so it's kind of hard to really grasp that. Robbie, I've been to Death Valley and Baton Rouge.
Ooh.
Great pick. One of my buddies took me like a 4 a.m. trip. We drive 8 hours. It was a great game. Tailgating's phenomenal. For me, it's definitely in the SEC. Maybe Alabama. I mean, the tailgating in the SEC is different.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to Starkville, there were people getting like portable chandeliers and putting them into tents. I'm like, am I at the Ritz-Carlton? What's going on here? I mean,
portable chandeliers.
Yes. Yes, Robbie. Portable chandeliers. They're putting them to a generator. It's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, no, I'd have to probably go with Alabama just because of the prestige. But if I had to go like a soft second, give me Penn State.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Well, Happy Valley.
Alabama, it's pretty insane. I've been there.
We got to vote for Florida State on the text line. Okay. I've not been to Florida State either, so that'd be
good.
I
feel like some of those southern Florida ones are good too. Okay, switching to sports. In honor of the international NFL schedule being released this morning, what is one international sporting event, so it can be any sporting event, that is on your bucket list, in your lifetime, you want to go to it once? And let's just say it's free for the sake of.
Okay, mine, so I could go Olympics here. I guess I could go World Cup, but mine would be Premier League soccer. Mm. I'm not a huge Premier League guy, but I've seen some of the crowds there and like how intense it is. And I would love to just go check it out, whether it's, you know, like a Chelsea game or whatever it be. Like, I would love to go watch one Premier League soccer game in Europe and just check it out because it looks like it's nuts over there. So that would probably be my answer.
I have a feeling, Nick.
You go ahead, Michelle, please. Ladies first.
Mine be Wimbledon.
Okay.
It's always been something. I'm not a huge...
I should have said that.
It's not. I'm not a huge tennis gal, but I actually went to the Cincinnati Open a couple months ago, and I didn't realize how entertaining and just unique a sporting event like that is. You know, sitting there, the way it's all set up. It was phenomenal in Cincinnati, and I can only imagine, you know, at the absolute highest level. So Wimbledon is definitely on the top of my list, and I wish that, you know, Serena could be in it, and we could make that happen. But I don't
Wimbledon
know if that happened.
Is on my list too. I can't believe I didn't say it. The British Open, which I guess is just called the Open now.
Yeah,
that I would love to go watch that one too.
Even the Masters.
There's a lot,
and I know that's in the U.S., but the Masters too. I mean, if you were able to win the lottery, that'd be incredible too.
Yeah,
yeah. My brother and dad actually went to the Masters practice rounds this past year. It got rained out the year before, so they went. And I was like, oh, I didn't get to go.
That's pretty awesome.
I see who the favorite is in the family. That's all right.
Absolutely.
For me, Michelle kind of hinted at it. It is definitely a soccer situation for me. Growing up as a kid, my grandparents are, Italian. They would always buy the sports packages for European soccer, whatever. But I've always wanted to experience a derby day in Italy. Like, for example, I'm a big AC Milan fan, and they're actually playing Inter Milan in their rivalry in the Champions League. So, like, that is probably the mecca of a rivalry in the Champions League. So the Derby della Madonnina is my...
What you said.
Yes, exactly. The tongue twister. That is my number one thing there.
And on the text line, John in Springfield, the Open. Somebody else says, I'd love to attend the Highland Games in Scotland. The World Cup, that's a good one.
Does the running of the Bulls count? Can I go watch the people run away from the Bulls?
Please be up high.
I'd just... I'm not running away from the bull, but I want to watch people run away from the bull.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely is something that would intrigue me as well. Okay, back to non-sports. If you had a biography on your life, a movie,
okay,
who would you want to play you? And I can go first if you guys want to take a minute. I think Rachel McAdams.
That's a good one.
When she has the red hair, because I just feel like it goes with me. I also think that she's one of the most versatile actresses. I mean, she's been in so many different movies, also one of my favorite actresses. And I'm going to answer for Rex Road.
Okay.
Because this just came into my head when I was coming up with this question.
Ben Affleck?
Vince Vaughn.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, I think his like one-liners, his goofiness, his mannerisms. Yeah. I just think it would amplify Rex Road, and it would just be amazing. So, Rex Road, if you are listening.
That's good.
Not Ben Affleck, Vince Vaughn.
I will go. There's a couple that popped into my mind. I think I will go with Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson would be my guy. Number one, he doesn't have a whole lot of hair, so I feel like that's a prerequisite for if you're going to play me in a movie, you can't have a whole lot of hair. So, Woody Harrelson will be on my list. He's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
He's played in a bunch of different roles, which I like. I just find him to be pretty funny. So I'll go Woody Harrelson.
He also looks like Matthew McConaughey's brother.
Which apparently.
But apparently.
Maybe he is. I don't know.
I saw that the other day. Nick, what about you?
You know, I'm not too sure. Obviously, Woody Harrelson's a great comp for Robbie there. I don't know if you've seen the new show White House Plumbers on HBO Max.
I have not.
Highly recommend it.
Okay.
It's about Watergate, but besides that, it's pretty funny. It's comedy. For me, a lot of people tell me I look like Joey Tribbiani from Friends.
Okay.
Matt LeBlanc. I'd probably go Matt LeBlanc.
That's good. I like that.
Just for the feature comparison.
Okay. Yeah. I like that one for you, Nick. I love hearing everybody's comparisons.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Joey doesn't share his food. Okay, finally, rounding out with sports. We all work in the sports world. And, you know, it's our job to cover some big-time athletes. But what is one athlete that you, if you had the opportunity to cover, you kind of in your head for a second would have to be like, okay, a bit of a fan moment of, wow, you know, this is pretty incredible right now. I can go first with this one for you guys to think for a second. But it honestly happened the other day when I went to Memphis to cover the Lakers and the Grizz. First round NBA playoff series. I was in the press conference room and LeBron walked in.
Yep.
And I will say, you know, people can think however they want about him, but sitting in the press conference for a moment, I had to be like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie.
For sure. Like I was in a media scrum with him one time too, and he's like the first athlete I looked at. I was like, golly, he's huge. Good gracious. He's a big guy.
Well, and I walked out, and I was about five, like a foot and a half from Anthony Davis, and I was like,
also huge.
I feel like a very small person right now. I mean, my forehead might have been right above his belly button.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, dude, what's up?
Gigantic human. How are you?
How you doing up there?
Yeah. I think mine would be Tiger Woods, and I know it's you know, it's a little different now. He's gone through injuries, and you know, he just played the Masters, and then had to go get ankle surgery again. So. I don't know how many more times we're going to see Tiger Woods in like a competitive setting at this point, but you know, Tiger Woods, I still think you can make a pretty good argument in my lifetime, which dates back to the early 90s, might be the most dominant athlete of the time. I mean, look, it's a PGA Tour, you know, I think he had like at one point the height of it like almost a 30% winning percentage, which sounds small, it's not, it's gigantic. It's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
And had he not had the personal issues that he had and the injuries and the car wreck and all these other things, I think he definitely probably would have broke the major record of 18. He's at 15 right now. He's probably going to stay there would be my guess.
Yeah.
But he would have, I think he would have smashed the 18 majors held by Jack Nicklaus. So I will go Tiger Woods.
Yeah, no, that's a good one.
I am going to keep it not localized Nashville, but in the United States, Albert Pujols.
Grew up
playing baseball. I mean, idolized his swing pattern, the way he hit the ball. That's what I did growing up as a kid, so probably Albert Pujols. But Lorenzo Insigne is my other one. That's actually happened last year when I covered Nashville SC. One of my buddies plays for Toronto FC, and Lorenzo Insigne photobombed my podcast. And I was like, okay, I've lived.
It's all good now. Yep. Yeah. Everything's good.
Honestly, though, I will say the first time I saw Derrick Henry in person about 2 years ago, I was like, wow. this is probably the biggest human I've ever seen in my
entire
life. Yeah,
he's pretty large.
It's like, how are we the same thing?
Pretty fast.
How are we the same actual person?
Right? It's crazy. You know? This has been The Choice Is Yours. You can check it out normally every Wednesday at 8:30. Moving some things around today. Got Barry Trotz coming up at 7:45. Paul Kaharsky at 8. And Luke Evangelista at 8:30 today. So looking forward to all that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into some playoff action from last night in the NBA and the NHL. At the top of the hour at 7 o'clock, we'll throw this question out there. How much will we learn about Mike Vrabel coming up this season? All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Jokic down back over to Murray at the midpost. Spin move on Payne. Head fake up under jumper. Baked it up and in, and there it is. Triple-double for Nikola Jokic. It was less than two dribbles. 102-80.
Big game last night for Nikola Jokic. The Nuggets win 118-102. Take a 3-2 series lead in that one against the Phoenix Suns. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road. 1025-1063 The Game, presented by TJ Anderson, Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they are referred to so often. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. So, Michelle, a triple-double for Nikola Jokic last night against the Phoenix Suns. The Suns had tied the series back up at two, so the home team has won every game so far in the series. They'll be back in Phoenix for Game 6 coming up. But Jokic last night with 29 points, 13 rebounds, 12 assists. So pretty nice game for a guy that's been in the MVP running in the last three or four years. Joel Embiid, the MVP this year, but certainly a big game from Jokic last night. And the Denver Nuggets, one win away from taking down Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and the Phoenix Suns.
And Nikola Jokic, that was his 10th triple-double in the postseason, passing Wilt Chamberlain.
Not bad.
So pretty good. I don't know if you saw Kevin Durant with the tech last night.
I did.
For Jokic. I will say, I just rewatched the video. Jokic kind of really played into that flopness. But getting a little chirpy, a little chirpy out there. Obviously, the Suns don't have Chris Paul, who's your favorite player ever the entire NBA. But
him and Kyrie Irving both. Just can't say enough good things.
I mean, you look at the Suns, too, and you think when they lost Chris Paul, it was going to be a tall task just because of how much he does for this team on the offense. But, I mean, the Suns have hung in there. I've thought that the Nuggets have been one of the best teams all year. You mentioned Jokic. I mean, he's been in the MVP conversation all of last year. He could have won it again this year. And the one knock on him has been, okay, well, you can be MVP or play at an MVP caliber level every year, but you don't have a championship.
Right.
They are one game away from closing it out, but I do think that the Suns, I think they'll take them to Game 7.
I do too. I think that one's going 7. I thought that Philadelphia and Boston was going 7-2, and then Philly goes on the road last night to Boston, and they win 115-103. Joel Embiid, 33 points, 7 rebounds. Tyrese Maxey last night with 30 points as well. I'm just saying, he's pretty good. But what a win for the 76ers last night. Now they've got a chance going back home in Game 6 to close things out there. But 115-103, I'm pulling for Philadelphia because I think it's a better matchup for the Heat. They looked pretty good last night.
Philly looked good. I mean, you know, when you watched that game last night, and I was watching at an establishment, so there was no audio.
Yep.
But just looking and watching the body language of the two teams, Philadelphia looked so incredibly confident. James Harden is playing his best basketball. You mentioned Tyrese Maxey, a young guy who's been able to give them a lot of production out there. Of course, Joel Embiid, MVP this year. But Boston just looked like they were just chucking up shots left and right. They didn't look confident. They looked like they were playing almost with their heads down. And I just really liked everything from the shot selection from Philadelphia, just a full team effort, sharing the basketball. And honestly, we haven't seen a James Harden, you know, postseason play like this in a while. And I mean, he looks really good. And I also think too, looking at the 76ers, Doc Rivers needs to be successful this year. I mean, they need to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, because if they don't, I have a feeling he probably won't be in Philadelphia much longer.
I think there's a good chance that may be the case. In the NHL last night, Carolina wins 6-1. And Michelle, you were talking You looked up, it was 1-1 between Carolina and New Jersey, and then all of a sudden the Hurricanes roll off four goals in like 4.5 minutes, and it's 5-1 in the second period. By the end of the second period, it was 6-1 last night, and you know the Devils talking about not handling success the right way after they played well in game three, and they just stopped playing basically last night was the phrase that they used. But Carolina on the verge of advancing to the Eastern Conference Final with a 6-1 win last night against New Jersey. They're now up 3-1 in that series. And Dallas responds last night with a 6-3 win against the Kraken. So the Kraken go up 2-1 in that series. Dallas comes back on the road, and they win 6-3 last night. Joe Pavelski stays hot. He gets his 6th of the postseason last night, and that's a big win for the Stars. I think that one has a chance to go 7-2, but a really fun series between the Stars and the Kraken. The only bad part about it has been it's been late at night. So it's been tough to catch all of it.
It's been tough. We're watching the highlights early this morning. But to your point on the Hurricanes-Devils, I thought that the Devils, you know, would have been able to tie up this series, especially at home. And, you know, you mentioned after the game, they essentially were like, yeah, kind of stopped playing. It's like, okay, well, let's not admit that, you know. Let's realize that we are in a New Jersey market with fans who are starving for some playoff wins. But I was watching, like I said, I was watching the Celtics 76ers on the TV in front of me. And then to the left of me was the Hurricanes and the Devils. And I see it's 1-1, okay, eating some food, watching basketball. All of a sudden I turn over, I said, Are they replaying something over here? I said, wait, it was just 1-1. But yeah, as you mentioned, Hurricanes rattled off four goals in about four minutes. So pretty good performance. I have a feeling the Canes will be able to close that one out, especially now that they're heading back home.
Big night tonight for Canada coming up in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Toronto and Florida in game number 4. The Panthers up 3-0 in the series with a chance to sweep the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight, which, if that happens, that place is just going to be inconsolable. After you win the first round finally against Tampa Bay, and then Boston goes down in the East, and you think, man, that path has really opened up for Toronto. They were the betting favorite coming into this series to win the Stanley Cup, and they find themselves on the ropes, down 0-3, with a chance to be swept tonight by the Florida Panthers. I'm very interested to see that game. And then later tonight, Vegas and Edmonton at 9 o'clock. Edmonton down 2-1 to the Vegas Golden Knights. They were terrible in Game 3. Mm-hmm. I would expect them to play really well tonight. I mean, very rarely do you see McDavid and Draisaitl get shut down 2 games in a row. So I would expect that they'll probably respond tonight. But this has the potential to be just a nightmare night for the nation of Canada, with Toronto potentially being swept. And if Edmonton doesn't win, they'll be down 3-1 to the Vegas Golden Knights.
Grab your brooms, everyone. Start sweeping.
People getting very nervous out there.
Floor looks a little dirty. Let's get some dustpans out.
I think they're done.
I think they're done, too. I think you grab those brooms, everybody. Sweep it up. Sorry, Toronto. And I feel bad for their fan base. Well, kind of.
I think it's absolutely hilarious.
I mean, we talked about this, though, right? I mean, it is the perfect situation, right? Toronto, they come out of the first round. Okay, the Panthers, they beat the Bruins, the bad Bruins all year long. Oh, you got the matchup. Now you're the Stanley Cup favorites. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, then you let all that get into your head, and now the Panthers are up 3-0 and have a chance to shut it out and then get some nice rest before they have to play their next series.
I'm interested to see how that one goes tonight. We'll see if the Oilers can respond as well. In the NBA tonight, like you said, Heat and Knicks in game number 5 tonight. Miami up 3-1 in that series. The Knicks favored. I think the Heat might close it out tonight.
I agree.
Lakers and Warriors, I think Golden State's going to win. I don't think they go down tonight. I think they'll be back in L.A. for Game 6. But LeBron and the Lakers with a big opportunity tonight. They can close this thing out and advance to the Western Conference Final. And if you can get it done tonight, if you're L.A., especially with the guys who are a little bit older, like LeBron, and I'm not saying that AD is old, but anytime you can get some rest is probably good for AD. So if you could get this done tonight, I fully believe that Suns – and Nuggets are going to a game seven, that would be pretty big for LA if they could get it done tonight and get some rest before that next series.
Yeah, that's the huge key right there. If LA can close this out tonight, I mean, for guys like LeBron and Anthony Davis, who they've been receiving treatment essentially around the clock just to be able to be game ready. I know Anthony Davis has had that hip injury kind of nagging all year long, but they closed out Memphis early, or it went to six games. So they closed out Memphis. They got time to rest before this Warriors series. That the Warriors went to seven with the Kings. Lakers won game one. If they have a chance to close this one out in five and they have even more rest, and as you mentioned, I think that the Nuggets and the Suns will go to seven. I mean, that just puts them in better position. They can get their legs back under them. LeBron, you can get rehab, all that stuff. But I will say, I don't know if you saw this, but it's on my personal Twitter account. There has been a dog who essentially has predicted this Warriors-Lakers series. And the dog predicted that the Lakers will go up 3-1. Like, he shot basketballs into a specific, either a Lakers or a Warriors cup. He's predicted it exactly how it's gone so far. And if the Warriors win tonight, he'll be right. And he has the Warriors coming back and winning in seven.
Man.
So that dog.
So we're going with the dog.
If whoever owns that dog, you go buy a lottery ticket if that dog is right. So going to be interesting tonight.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get back into the Titans. Take your thoughts on them as well. And ask this question. How much will we learn about Mike Vrabel this season with a roster currently as constructed? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.